Hey, thank you very much for the introduction. I'm very happy to be at Perimeter Institute. So I'm going to talk about what we can learn about the dark matter velocities close to the position of the sun from both simulations and now more recently from Gaia data. So why is this important for dark matter to know the velocities? Well, if you're searching for dark matter with direct detection, the signals in these dark matter searches strongly depend on the input you have for the dark matter distribution in the solar neighborhood. And more specifically, the local dark matter density, so close to the position of the sun, as well as the velocity distribution of dark matter close to the position of the sun, they enter the calculation of event rates in these underground detectors, and any uncertainties that we have in these parameters also will translate to large uncertainties in the interpretation of direct detection data. So just to give you an overview of how these inputs enter these calculations, well, the differential event rate per unit detector mass in direct detection experiments depend on the local dark matter density, which is just this normalization in the calculation of the event rate, but there's also this input of the velocity distribution of the dark matter in the detector reference frame, which enters in this integration enters in the event rate through this integration. And so different experiments which probe different parts of the energy range, recoil energy range in these underground detectors, will also be sensitive in different ways to this integral. So this becomes more complicated and more important to have some idea of what the dark matter velocities are. And so if you see these results from the direct detection community, you have, for example, this is the spin-independent interaction. So the y-axis is just the dark matter nuclear cross-section, and the x-axis is the dark matter mass. And these curves are from different experiments which exclude these parameter regions. But in this sort of plots, there is an important assumption which goes in, and that's an assumption of the model for the halo, the dark matter halo. And if you change this assumption, so the dark matter density and the dark matter velocity distributions, these curves would shift up and down or left and right. So the dark matter density I just mentioned is just a parameter which is a normalization in the event rates. So the curves would just, it translates to limits on the cross-section, which would just shift up and down, whereas the dark matter velocity distribution is more complicated, and I'll show you what happens with that, depending on how you change the dark matter velocity distribution. But the assumption which is most commonly made is the standard halo model for the dark matter distribution. And this is really the simplest model for the dark matter distribution in our galaxy. It assumes that dark matter is distributed in this isothermal sphere. And this leads to flat rotation curves, of course. And that was one of the motivations for this model. And also, it leads to a velocity distribution, which is an isotropic Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution. And so the density profile, especially in the outer parts of the galaxy, goes as 1 over r squared. The local dark matter, so this is just to also explain rotation curves, flat rotation curves. The local dark matter density is usually set fixed to 0.3 or 0.4 GV per centimeter cubed. And the most probable dark matter speed is 220 kilometers per second. So it's equal to the local circular speed. But of course, well, first of all, this is not quite physical, because you will have infinite density at the origin, at the center of the galaxy. You can truncate this distribution to escape speeds from the galaxy. But even if you consider all the uncertainties in the parameters which go into this sort of model, the actual dark matter distribution may be quite different. What do we know about some of these parameters? So For the dark matter density, for local dark matter density, we have two main ways to have estimates for this parameter. One is the so-called local estimates, where we can use the kinematical data from a population of stars close to the sun. And these are rather robust, but you have to also account for the contribution of baryons, which have significant uncertainty. So they usually have large error bars. Whereas for the global estimates, you model both the luminous and the dark matter mass of the Milky Way, and you fit it to rotation curve data across the galaxy. And you can reach good precision, but the estimates are strongly model dependent. So you also have large systematic uncertainties. But given all the estimates that there exists in the literature, we know that the local dark matter density falls between maybe 0.2 to 0.8 GeV per centimeter cube. And there are some recent local estimates for it. But you can also see that these estimates are affected by systematic uncertainties, and also their difference between the different estimates based on different data sets is really all the systematic uncertainties which goes into these calculations. But again, for direct detection, this is a number which just multiplies in the calculation of the event rate. So it's less crucial maybe to pinpoint the exact value. Whereas the dark matter velocity distribution is more complicated, and it depends on the halo model. And so in the standard halo model, as I mentioned, you assume an isotropic Maxwellian distribution, and you also truncate it at the escape speed of the particles from the galaxy. And so you also have some estimate for these parameters which enter into the calculation. So the question that we were interested to answer is, how can we obtain information from simulations of galaxy formation, and now more recently from observations about the dark matter velocity distribution? Is the dark matter velocity distribution really close to what is expected in the standard halo model, or is something very different? So from simulations, it's the way that is done is that you can go to multiple simulations where you have some galaxies which look like the Milky Way based on some criteria. And then you find these galaxies and you go to the local position close to 8 kiloparsec where the sun is, and you can extract what is the dark matter velocity distribution from these simulations, and then use that distribution to do this analysis of direct detection data and see how things change. But now, more recently, from observations, we also have some input, not directly on the dark matter velocity distribution, but from Gaia, for example, you have specific stellar populations which are close to the position of the sun. And if you can actually go to simulations and find very similar velocities for the stars in the simulations, then you can actually see what is the dark matter component of those stellar populations. So one example which we looked at is a radially anisotropic stellar population, which is prominent and was identified in Gaia data. And you can actually go back to cosmological simulations and see if you have this sort of population of stars in the simulation and extract the dark matter component of it, or see what is the dark matter doing there. Is it similar to the stellar population or not? Because if it is, then it can actually quite a lot change the expectation for these kind of velocities that you have for the dark matter distribution, and then change also these expected event rates in direct detection experiments. So I will first focus on what you can find just from simulations without including any information from observations, and in the next half of the talk, I will discuss what you learn from observations as well. So from simulations, well, now you have all these high resolution simulations which include not only the dark matter, but also astrophysical processes. So the baryonic component that exists in the universe. And this is an example of the illustrious simulations. And the time is running close to the 0.5 billion years after the Big Bang. And you see the density of dark matter here. And so due to the force of gravity, dark matter clumps together. And you can actually see the center of where the galaxies would form later. So different colors is just a different density of dark matter. And in a second, it's going to switch to the baryonic matter or gas, actually. And so the different colors now it's showing you the gas, and it's the different colors are the different temperatures of gas. And so the gas falls into the center of these massive, where the mass is higher in the dark matter. And then in the center of these really active galaxies which are formed there, you actually have supermassive black holes. And this is showing you basically the temperatures of the material which is accreted to the black holes, and then it is spread out close to these centers of really active galaxies. But in any case, if you run these simulations until today, what happens is that you see a zoo of different types of galaxies that we also expect from observations. So you have different types of galaxies. And so for us, if you want to know what happens with the local dark matter distribution, you can actually go to galaxies which look like the Milky Way and try to extract information about the dark matter velocities from that. So we have all these disk galaxies which we can use now in these sort of simulations. And people have been doing that since many years now. And this is a result from 2008, where there were simulations without baryons. So these were the dark matter only simulations. So assuming that the whole content of the universe is just collisionless dark matter. And they found the dark matter velocity distribution from these simulations were quite different than the usual Maxwellian in the standard halo model. So this is from Aquaria simulation. So deficits at the peak of the distribution and this excess at the higher speeds. But of course, now these have been revised with simulations, or maybe replaced by simulations which include the baryonic physics, which are quite important for galaxy formation. And so these had significant systematic uncertainties because the impact of baryons were neglected. And now we have a number of high resolution simulations with baryons. So this is just a similar plot showing you the results of the velocity distributions that you would get from all the different simulations, which include, or more recent simulations, including dark matter plus baryons. And one important point is that each of these, so these different colors are the results of the velocity distribution from different simulations. But a lot of these simulations have maybe more than one galaxy in them, so maybe a few halos. And I'm showing here the velocity distribution, which is farthest from the standard halo model, which is shown as this dashed black, just to show the spread of the results that you can get from different simulations. Yes.
So you mentioned in this new studies, both high resolution, the role of baryons have been included. Mm-hmm. So what plays the stronger lever there?
So here, the point is that I will go into this in a second, but each of these simulations adopt different galaxy formation model, different resolution for what is the dark matter particle mass, which is like 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6 solar masses, which is called the particle, and also a different spatial resolution. Another important point, so they do have there is a large variation in the different in the speed distributions from different simulations, but also I would say one other important point is that usually the most common criterion to identify a Milky Way-like galaxy in these simulations is the Milky Way mass constraint. So usually you go to simulate to one of these simulations, if you find halos which have fall within the uncertainties of the Milky Way mass, and that's it. If you do put more and more restricting criteria to identify what is a Milky Way-like galaxy, you would get different results. So this was one of the things that we came upon. This is the most common criteria, but things change. So yes.
So do all of these have like 220 kilometers per second circular velocity at 8 kilopascals?
No. No,
okay, so
no. A lot of them even don't have correct rotation curves. So that's something to keep into account. So yeah, exactly for this purpose, to make sure that, especially for direct action, you're really sensitive to the velocities at the solar position. You want to make sure rotation curves are more or less correct. So you have to try to come up with some criteria to identify your Milky Way-like galaxies in these simulations. Now, we use the Eagle and Apostle simulations to do this exercise. And just to give you an idea what these are, so Eagle has different resolutions, but we use a high resolution. So it's a cosmological box which is with a side length of 25 megaparsecs. This is the total number of particles in this box. And these are the masses of dark matter and gas particles. And Apostle intermediate resolution is similar to resolution similar to the Eagle high res resolution. These are zoom simulations of Milky Way and Andromeda-like galaxies. The nice thing about these simulations is that, well, first of all, we have many, many galaxies, especially in Eagle. So Apostle were 24 zoom galaxies, but Eagle has many galaxies which have the correct mass of the Milky Way. Which we could work with and put some criteria to identify a truly Milky Way-like. These are calibrated to reproduce the observed distribution of stellar masses and sizes of the galaxies today. Yes.
Do these two have the same subgrid feedback models? Or?
Yes. Yeah. So this is just they're very similar Apostle is just you just zoom in, so you take Eagle, the halos from Eagle, and zoom into a Milky Way and Andromeda-like galaxies based on like the distance and so on. We also have companion dark matter-only simulations. So for each of the halos that exist in these simulations, you also have a counterpart which is run without any baryons. So you can actually see what is the effect of baryons. So this is a cut through a volume of the Eagle simulation. And this is showing you again the gas, the different temperatures. And if you zoom in to one section, so this is 100 megaparsec length, you zoom in and then you zoom in more, you see a galaxy which maybe looks like the Milky Way. So we need to find these Milky Way analogs in these simulations. So this is an edge-on and face-on image of a galaxy which have spirals and a disk, and we want to see how we can find them, not just by eye, but by some other criteria. And so we used, in addition to the mass of the Milky Way, we made sure that the simulated halos also have the correct stellar mass, not only just the total mass, but the correct stellar masses, and also they fit the rotation curve data of the Milky Way. So we use this large compilation of data of rotation curves. This is 2,700 data points. The reason this is not flat is that this is the local, the angular circular velocity. Not the local, but the angular circular velocity, which is just a circular velocity divided by radius. And this is as a function of the radius from the center of the galaxy. And these are the black are all the data points. And what you see here as this magenta, lighter magenta line, this is an envelope of all the rotation curves of all the halos which had the correct mass. So a lot of them did not fit actually the rotation curves well. The darker magenta band is the ones which had the correct stellar mass. So the ones which had the correct stellar mass also fit better the rotation curves. And this is the best fits rotation curve. And so we started with 61 halos in Eagle and 24 in Apostle, which had the correct mass, total mass. But with these criteria, we reduced it to a total of 14 halos, which is still enough because you could put more and more criteria, but then you lose statistics. This is still good enough to do this sort of analysis. We have 14 halos. This is, yes.
Galaxies merge from time to time. Do you also take the time since last merger into account?
So this we didn't, you could do that. You could identify them based on the merger history as well. We didn't put any additional criteria here, just that the rotation curves would fit well. And I think that kind of includes, you know, if you have a very recent merger, it might, you know, change, you know, what your rotation curves might be. But you could, yeah, you could do different things. But we didn't put any more criteria here. But I think all, we did look into these, and I think all of them had quiet merger history, which, you know, within the last, you know, redshift. Yeah, I don't remember the exact values of the last, you know, large merger they had, but there weren't any big, you know, one-to-one merger within the recent past of these halos. So yeah, so there are 14 halos, and now we can actually extract the different things from these. We could look at the spherically averaged dark matter density profiles. This is for the 12 Eagle halos, and this is just to show you the range that we have in these dark matter density profiles. This curve is just a generalized NFW profile with some parameters. For direct detection, we're not really interested in the whole range of this rho FR, but we want to really focus on what happens around 8 kiloparsecs, so we can do a little bit better than the spherically averaged. We can identify a torus region, or this is just a circular or cylindrical shell region around the position of the sun between 7 to 8 kiloparsec. This region is also on the aligned with the stellar disk and has a height between -1 to 1 kiloparsec. And we can find the average dark matter density in this shell, in this torus region. And we find that our estimates agree well with the local and global estimates. So we're not trying to update those estimates because obviously they're using observational data, but we just wanted to see that we agree, and we did agree with those estimates. Now we can also find the velocity distributions in this shell. And here is an example of the velocity distribution for two halos. So this is in the galactic rest frame. And what you see here, the magenta and the green are two different halos within our 14 halos. What is plotted here underneath, these dashed colored lines, are their best fit Maxwellian velocity distribution. So with Maxwellian velocity distribution with a free peak, and you find the best fit case in each one, for each one. And the standard halo model, which is a black one, is just underneath this green curve. And this has a peak at 220 kilometers per second. So it does match one of these halos, but not the other. And all the other 14 kind of fall between these two. So this is the farthest peak from the Maxwellian. This is the closest peak from the Maxwellian. But what is interesting is that the functional form of the Maxwellian seems to be working fine here. Whereas if you look at the counterparts of these halos in the dark matter only simulation, it does not work. So the best fit Maxwellian does not fit. Even by eye, you can see that the fit is really bad. And we see something very similar to what was seen in Aquarius, that, you know, you have these deficits at the peak and the excess at high velocities and also at low velocities. And so we also find that, so the Maxwellian distribution with a free peak provides a better fit to the halos in the hydrodynamical simulations compared to their dark matter only counterparts. And the best fit peak speeds, of course, have a range. And we find it's between 223 to 289 kilometers per second, depending on which halo you're considering. So it's not the 220 kilometers per second, which is assumed in the SHM based on these different realizations in the simulations. So,
sorry.
Yes.
So I'm guessing the circular velocity also would be different.
It is. Yeah, I will show you a plot of the circular velocities compared to this best fit peak speed.
Galaxy formation models will also affect this. Are these for particular galaxies?
This is for a particular simulation, but we wanted to see from all those simulations that I showed you at the beginning, which had different results. A few of them actually provide the data to do this sort of analysis for direct detection. And we wanted to see if there are some common trends. So there were a variety of different results from the different simulations. But in all of them, we found a few common trends. And one was that the baryons deepen the gravitational potential, especially in the inner halo. And so they do shift the peak of the dark matter distributions to higher speeds. And the other one is that in most cases, the baryons also make the local dark matter distribution more Maxwellian when they are included in the simulation. So two other simulations also looked into that effect. And they also found that things become too, the recent simulations all are pointing towards this conclusion, that things become Maxwellian when baryons are included. Now, just to also see what is happening with the local circular speed, you can compare the local circular speed with the peak speed of the Maxwellian. And if they're set equal to in the SHM, so they're equal if they're isothermal, and we see that for the Eagle halos, if you look at the dark matter only halos, they're quite far from isothermal, whereas for the hydrodynamical halos, although they're not completely isothermal, but they become closer to isothermal. And you can understand this maybe a little bit better by looking at the rotation curve data. And you see that actually for the dark matter only simulations, around 8 kiloparsec, since there's no baryons here, this is still, the rotation curves are still rising. And so they haven't really reached the plateau of a flat rotation curve at 8 kiloparsec, whereas for the hydro rotation curves, they have already reached where you're close to an isothermal with rotation curves due to the extra baryons in the center, which just increases these velocities in the inner parts. And around the position of the sun specifically, baryons are quite important and play an important role. So you cannot draw realistic conclusions if you completely ignore them. So they're quite important, and that's just the takeaway message of this exercise. So what happens with direct detection? Because, well, the Maxwellian works rather well, not for all halos, even for the hydrodynamical simulations. If you look at individual halos and do and test how well the Maxwellian fits, it does not fit perfectly for all the halos. But is that important or not? So for direct detection, we're really sensitive to the integral here, not individually to just F, but you have to do this integration. And so if you assume standard spin-independent or spin-dependent interactions, this cross-section here has a 1 over V squared dependence. And if you plug this back into this equation of the rate, you see that you can actually write the event rate in this way, where you have factorized out all the astrophysics. This is just the local circular, the local density, but you also have here this integration here, which just includes the velocity distribution. And this is usually called the velocity integral or the halo integral. And so you see that the direct detection event rates are proportional to the halo integral, which is just this integration. So if we look at this instead of individually at f of v, then you can have a better idea of what happens with the rates. And so we did that. And for all of the halos in this simulation, this is this halo integral is a function of the minimum dark matter speed for each recoil energy. And we find that, so this dashed line is the one sigma uncertainty band that you find for, this is for one halo, this is for the other halo. From their velocity distributions, you can compute these halo integrals. And the mean is shown as the solid colored lines. And this, the dashed colored curve is their best fit Maxwellian. So always the best fit Maxwellian halo integral falls within the one sigma uncertainty band of the halo integral of the simulated halos. So basically, we see that for direct detection, for all of the 14 halos that we looked at, basically it's as good to use the best fit Maxwellian distribution, to be able to see what happens with the simulations. It's the same result. And then we look at the dark matter only, and again, it's very different. So the best fit Maxwellian does not fit, it does not fall within the one sigma uncertainty band. Yes.
One of the feedback models there is the stellar winds. And the way usually in this simulation, the stellar wind is you convert gas cells to stellar particles, and the velocity there is given by the thermal velocity of the dark matter halos.
Mm-hmm.
So is this why when you include baryons, you go toward isothermal?
No, you don't make
this
any...
This is unphysical, right?
You don't make any assumptions. Why is it unphysical that it's isothermal? I mean, you become...
No, I meant the way they launch these star particles.
Okay,
velocity is given by the local dark matter dispersion.
No, but we don't... In these simulations, I don't make an assumption for what is the local dark matter velocity at all. So this is something that you... It's an out... you do this later after you have the halo. In the process...
When you include... The way you include the baryons...
As far as I understand, the simulations are, I did not know that there is an input on the dispersion of the velocity of the dark matter particles to include the baryons. So I had not heard of this. I don't know. I don't think Eagle does that, but we can discuss maybe more later. So it depends a lot on the simulation and the way that this feedback is included. So... For the dark matter only, this does not match because, again, you are shifting the velocities to higher velocities when you include baryons. So you get a better match in this case when baryons are included. We also wanted to see if this is a common trend in the different simulations. And again, there were two other simulations which had a few halos. The MAGIC simulation and this simulation run by Sloan et al, which had the data for the halo integrals. And you also see that their halo integrals match a Maxwellian halo integral as well. So this is quite interesting in terms of what direct action can do, to take these sorts of Maxwellian distributions with the range of uncertainties they have. Just to see in this sort of plots of spin-independent cross-section versus mass, how these curves look like. So this is just some old results from Lux, and this result from Dama is already excluded by the just the data from the same collaboration, but the data is inconsistent with this spin-independent, even if you don't consider other experiments. But just to see how things shift, right? If you have some allowed regions later, maybe somewhere else in this plot. How things shift. And so this is assuming standard halo model, and then this is for the same two halos, the simulated halos, where we directly use no fits to the data, but just directly the data from these simulations and see how these curves shift. So there is a factor of 2 to 3 shift in the cross-section and a few GeV shift in mass, and to see what comes from the velocity distribution, we can actually fix the local dark matter density to 0.3 GeV per centimeter cube for the halos as well. Just to do the analysis of the simulations. And so you can see that actually this shift in cross-section at higher masses is just due to the different local dark matter density of these halos. But the velocity distributions basically shift these curves at low dark matter masses. And this is just because the halo integrals, if you remember, you have a shift in the tails of the halo integrals compared to the standard halo model. And this is large Vmin, which where you are probing really the low dark matter masses when you're probing the high minimum dark matter speed. So it does lead to this more or less horizontal shift in the local, in these curves at low dark matter masses of around 10 GeV or so. And you can put together also the results of the other simulations. And again, this is using, this is taking a halo which is farthest from the standard halo model to see the effects here. And if you fix the local dark matter density to 0.3, you have a shift depending on, the halo you're using, the simulations and the type of feedback and all of these information which goes into the and assumptions which goes into the simulations, you see that there is a shift at low dark matter masses. based on the peak of the velocity distribution that you have. Well, what I was mentioning until now was for the standard interactions where you have a 1 over v squared, and you can actually try to generalize this a bit if you have a set of non-relativistic effective operators. The cross-section would be a linear combination of a velocity-dependent term and a velocity-independent term. And so this first term gives rise to the usual halo integral, which we checked. And the second term gives rise to a different halo integral. So we can also do this exercise for this new function. And again, the results are the same. So again, the best fit halo integral falls within the 1 sigma uncertainty band of the ones that you obtain from the simulated halos. And you can actually write this H in terms of eta as well, and the results are going to be similar. So you have the similar results that the Maxwellian functional form seems to be working with all these simulations. So this was all just using cosmological simulations without considering the effect of some substructure, maybe, which might be close to the position of the sun. There might always be some substructure which are below the resolution of these simulations. So these are state-of-the-art simulations, but you know, you can always have some sort of substructure. And there has been studies on this as well. I'm not going to get into that into a lot of detail right now, but just wanted to talk about one particular population of stars, which brought a lot of interest after Gaia DR2. So Gaia really provides an unprecedented level of information about 1 billion stars in our galaxy and provides really this map of the Milky Way, which is revolutionary in a way, with all the information about the distances and positions of stars. And very recently, there was a radially anisotropic stellar population, which was found in Gaia data. And this was in the inner halo. And this is a population of stars which have a very high radial velocity anisotropy. So they're on radial orbits. And we call this GRASS. It has been called the sausage or other names in the literature. And so the simulations were done to understand where this comes from. And they show that this originated from a massive dwarf galaxy, which was on a radial orbit and merged head-on with the Milky Way maybe about 9 to 10 giga-years ago. And just to show you what this looks in velocity space and why it's important for dark matter, if you look into, this is the radial velocity on the x-axis and the azimuthal velocity on the y-axis. And this is just the data that we have from STSS and Gaia for 1 to 10 kiloparsecs from the sun. And if you go to high metallicity stars, and here this is you're close to the galactic disk here, and you increase the height from the galactic disk as you go down, and you can actually see that there are two populations of two different populations maybe here. One is the disk of the Milky Way that is included in this data, and there is a so the disk is rotating around 200 kilometers per second, but it doesn't have much of a radial anisotropy. But then you also have this population here, which is not rotating much, but it has a high radial anisotropy. So there is this population of high metallicity of stars which are on radial orbits. And as you go back to lower metallicity of stars, you lose that, so everything becomes more isotropic. But as you go up the disk, you still have that. So you lose the disk as you go to 9 kiloparsec from the disk. You don't see the effect of the disk anymore, but you still have this radial anisotropic population of stars. It's just the error bars are higher here compared to here. So things become more fuzzy, but still this exists. And so we wanted to see if this has some dark matter component, which is doing exactly the same, then this is really radially anisotropic dark matter population around the position of the sun. It will change the whole picture of the velocity distribution. So what are the properties of the dark matter component of the GRASS? And the nice thing is that we can do that now because there are So there are simulations. You can use different ways of trying to answer this question. There is a simulation which finds the same population of stars, and you can look at what is the population of dark matter. But you can also do some modeling to try to answer this question. And so there were a couple of recent studies which brought a lot of attention to this graph. And they modeled this dark matter distribution of gas based on the distribution in stars. So they also used a simulation called the fire simulations, and they found that old metal poor stars trace the dark matter which is accreted from the oldest mergers, and then intermediate metallicity stars trace the dark matter accreted from younger mergers. And based on this correlation that they see in different populations of stars and dark matter, they go to data, STSS and Gaia data, and then they try to build up the total dark matter distribution just based on the distribution of stars. And they find that this sausage or this grasp is quite important. And so the total dark matter distribution based on STSS and Gaia is quite different than the usual standard HALO model. One has to be a bit careful with this sort of finding correlations, because non-negligible part of the dark matter halo, of course, originates also from dark substructures, has nothing to do with stars, and also smooth accretion of dark matter. So just going to the stars and trying to locate it, it's half of the story. So one has to also consider this part, which is I'm not aware how one can do that just from data. You can also model the dark matter velocity distribution based on gene analysis and trying to have a dark matter halo in steady state, and the local dark matter halo in steady state. And so here in this work, they assume that the velocity distribution can be a combination of a Maxwellian plus an anisotropic velocity distribution. This is the form of anisotropic velocity distribution. And beta here is just the anisotropy, the radial anisotropic parameter. But the issue is you don't know what this parameter is for the dark matter population. So you have to make some guesses. And so here they assume that this beta is the same as that the one you find for the stars. So it's equal to 0.9. And then the fraction is a bit easier to understand, but they set the fraction of this grasp to a maximum of 0.2 or 0.3, so 30%. And this is based on like the limits that you have on the ellipticity of the disk. And if this fraction is too high, it would distort all sorts of kinematical data we have for stars. So it will change the rotation curves. And you can find a limit for how much this there should be dark matter from this grasp. And so.
So this beta of like 1 means there's almost like radial.
It's just the radial. Yeah, this is just the radial anisotropy of the dark matter particles in the grasp or coming from the grasp, basically. Just that subset, which is 30%, let's say, or 20%. And so they introduced this SHM++, which is the next generation updated SHM, basically, which is different than the SHM. We can actually test this to see if this is how correct this is based on simulations. And it's nice because now there are these high resolution simulations called Auriga simulations. These are cosmological magnetohydrodynamic zoom in simulations of Milky Way galaxies. And there are 30 halos with the standard resolution. The resolution is better than the Eagle Apostle from the same group, but different baryonic feedback and different mass resolution and also softening length and so on. These are examples of the halos in these simulations. And the interesting thing is that 10 of these halos, so 1/3 of them, have this stellar population in these simulations. So the same grass population, very similar. And so this is the same plot, similar plot I showed before, now with the simulated stellar halo. And this is one of these halos, 5 to 20 kiloparsec from the galactic center, very similar. They're excluding the disk, so you don't see the disk here, but otherwise things are looking quite similar. And so we can take these halos and again do the same exercise and see is the dark matter distribution affected by this grass population. And so we again put this criteria of making sure rotation curves on stellar masses are correct. And actually, from the 10, there were 10 Milky Way-like galaxies in the Auriga, and four of them had the GRASP. So we are not using the full 10 halos which have the GRASP, but just being more conservative and just using four, which we know fits better the rotation curve and stellar masses. And then we can actually look at these properties of the dark matter distribution in the GRASP. So we find that the fraction of the dark matter particles belonging to the GRASP in the Taurus region can be as low as 0.006 to 17%. And so this sort of agrees with the estimates that there was from the previous work, because you know, we also agree that this cannot be so high. Otherwise, things that are observable will change in the Milky Way. But the anisotropy parameter also has a range. And if you look at this kappa, which is the fraction, as a function of the anisotropy parameter for the Milky Way-like halos which have the GRASP, we see that there is an anti-correlation between these parameters. So the ones which have high fraction actually don't have a high anisotropy, and the ones which have a low fraction have the high anisotropy. And this is quite difficult to try to understand, still ongoing work to understand where exactly this anti-correlation is coming from. But you can look at two other correlations to get a bit of insight about this. So first of all, if you look at this plot, this is kappa as a function of the mass of the dark matter progenitors at infall for these GRASP-like halos. And so if the mass is higher, of course, this kappa is also higher. So this is straightforward to understand. But then we see also there's an anti-correlation between this anisotropy parameter of dark matter particles in the GRASP as a function of the mass of the progenitor. And this is actually causing this anti-correlation. And this comes, you know, it's a difficult interplay and try to understand where it comes from, but it's interplay really between tidal stripping, the dynamical friction, and the dependence of also of the orbital parameters of these halos on the mass of at infall. So one has to really look at where this, you know, the orbits of these particles and where they came from. And there is some work which is ongoing on that. But for us, it's just enough to understand that we see this sort of anti-correlation. And so so you can see that actually the ones which have a higher beta parameter, as high as maybe 0.82, don't have such a large fraction. So they don't play that role in the velocity distribution, the total velocity distribution. You can also look at the profiles of the density. And the black is all dark matter. And you see that for these four halos, the total dark matter is not changing much between the different realizations of the halos. But the dark matter in the GRASP, well, depending on, so this is the for one halo which has very little dark matter in the GRASP. And these are for ones which have higher. So this there is really a lot of variation in them. You can look at the local dark matter densities, and we find that, again, there aren't really big differences between the values of the local dark matter density for the halos with and without the GRASP. So everything is, again, similar to what you expect from observations. So the ones with the star are the ones which have the GRASP. And then we can look at the velocity distribution. So this plot on the left is for a halo without the GRASP, and the black is the hydro case, and the brown is the dark matter only. And again, you see that here the conclusions without the GRASP, don't consider the GRASP, the conclusions are similar as before. Best fit Maxwellian seems to fit well. The black, which is the one with the hydro halo, and but for the brown, which is the dark matter only, it does not fit. So this is similar to before. But if you include the GRASP, we see that actually we check this actually with the velocity, different types of velocity distributions. If you have an addition of a Maxwellian plus anisotropic, so two population velocity distribution, and it did not fit well, because again, because of this anti-correlation we have between the fraction and isotropy of the particles in the grass. But if you add a parameter, make this Maxwellian a generalized Maxwellian, you just add this parameter alpha here, we found that this fits better. These are just the parameters that, there is for this generalized Maxwellian, the best fit parameters, this fits a bit better to the halo. And so, again, if you want to answer the question of, well, which equation exactly does this solve? Is this a solution of the Boltzmann equation? No, this is just what comes from the simulations. We don't think that even, you know, it's the local dark matter halos in steady state because of this grass or other substructures which might be going through the position of the sun. So we are not trying to solve those equations assuming steady state. This is just what's better fitting the results of the simulations because of the extra parameter. And then you can actually, here I'm showing all the different halos without the grass, and these are the ones with the grass. And so the best, the standard halo model is shown again as this dashed black line. And so there, we find the result is similar to what we've had found before with Eagle and Apostle, and other simulations also found that the speed distributions well, one thing which was similar was when you have without the grasp, the speed distributions are shifted to higher speeds compared to the dark matter only. But also with the grasp, speed distributions are just shifted to higher speeds compared to dark matter only, without the grasp. And there is a larger halo to halo variation for the halos without the grasp because they're more numerous. So we have 6 without the grasp and 4 with the grasp, and so you have a higher variation between the results here. But again, we have to go to the halo integrals to understand better what happens for direct detection, because just from the velocity distribution, you have to look at the 3D velocity distribution, go to the detector reference frame and integrate. And so before I show you that, I just wanted to show you again, results are similar to what we had before between dark matter only and the halos, which are hydrodynamical, become closer to isothermal. The ones which have the grasp are a little bit farther from isothermal due to this extra component. And so the halo integrals, we checked. This is again for the standard spin-independent interactions. And the halos without the grasp are more or less similar to a best fit Maxwellian. But here the tails actually are a little bit different when you consider the grasp. And so the generalized Maxwellian works better for the tails. And we looked at all the halos and the result is similar. So generalized Maxwellian in general agrees better with the halos, which include this component. And so again, this is putting everything there for all the halos without the grasp and all the halos with the grasp. And so you have a larger halo to halo variation for these halos, because so the difference between the different realization, the variation due to the different realization is larger than just considering the effect of this grasp. And so we can actually see what happens to the direct detection rates. And so we simulated the signals in two idealized direct detection experiments based on germanium and xenon. So germanium-based detectors, so the design that we assume is based on super CDMS, and this sort of thresholds will be reachable, and also the exposures will be reachable after maybe by 2024, we'll have results with similar exposures. And there are two different designs. One is the low threshold design, which is sensitive to lower dark matter masses, whereas the low background design, where you have higher exposure, you can go more lower in cross-section. So you can probe lower and lower cross-section, as well as a xenon-based detectors, which is based on the LZ, which will operate during 2020 to 2025. And so this is the result for the direct detection cross-sections. So the black, which is just the top curve here is so for germanium and for xenon. This is assuming the standard halo model, and the different color curves here are for the different halos in Auriga, which have this grass. And again, this difference is mainly due to the different local dark matter density. We can fix the local dark matter density, and then this just disappears. You don't see much of a difference between the standard halo model and the ones which have the grass. And this, these are just ratios of these cross sections between the simulations and standard halo model. And this is the effect that you have for halos without the grass. And again, if you put these, this one side by side with the previous plot where you have the grasp and you don't have the grasp, you see that these are all fixed local dark matter densities, but you see that there's a larger halo to halo variation without the grasp, since you have more realizations here. You have more halos to work with. But there is a mild shift of the exclusion limits for halos with the grasp for smaller dark matter masses. So from these kind of simulations, you don't see this large effect, and everything again is going back to so in this case a generalized Maxwellian, but if you don't include these substructures, more Maxwellian. So this brings me to the summary. So we can actually have some insight regarding the dark matter halo based on simulations and observations. So in simulations, we need to really be careful in identifying the galaxies which fit the Milky Way kinematical data. The local dark matter density agrees with the local and global estimates, and we find that the Maxwellian velocity distribution works well. But then if you include input from observations, so we looked at the dark matter component of this radially anisotropic stellar population, and we searched for this and compared it basically to what we have in the Auriga simulations. And we find that the fraction of the local dark matter particles which belong to this population is between 0.6 to 17%. And the anisotropy, it can go as high as 0.8%, but we have this anti-correlation between these two. And so in general, the effect is quite small. So the best fit velocity distribution is a generalized Maxwellian. But it's a mild effect on direct detection limits for light dark matter. So I guess you just have to be a bit careful when you do these sort of studies. Again, it would be useful to look at multiple simulations. So to try to see if something like this has been observed. So far, it's only the Auriga which does this sort of study and finds this grasp. But it's interesting to see if other cosmological simulations with different galaxy formation models, what can they tell you about these sorts of populations that you might see in data? Thank you.
So further questions for Nessie? So first we'll start with questions from students. Some student questions?
Find a student somewhere.
They're in it.
Okay, if not, then we'll open up to the general audience.
It's a technical question. How do this, you said this simulation like fire can trace the metallicity of the star? How do the simulation distinguish?
Yeah, so there are different ways of doing this. So in the simulations, there are initial stellar masses, which just tell you what is the probability of the different star populations to turn into supernovae. And then based on that, they have a different functions for how much metallicity they would transfer basically to the different populations of stars. So there are these initial mass functions, like, you know, if you know your stellar mass is whatever you have, you know, whatever stellar mass you have in this simulation, then how much of it will turn into this population of supernova? How much of it will, and there are then some, based on observations, limits you have from observations, there are the metallicity ranges of these. And so they trace, you know, the metallicities in different, you know, based on different elements and so on. And each simulation is different. So Eagle or Auriga is different than fire, let's say. Yeah. It's also a question how well those fit observations. So that becomes tricky. Yeah.
Okay.
So this RIG simulations, these are done using this good repo, which has this adaptive mesh refinement in there.
Yeah.
So for the ones with the grasp and the ones without the grasp, do you see any systematically different resolution between the halos with the grasp and the halos without the grasp? Is this like?
No. I mean, this resolution is always similar in all of them. Is the same. The mass resolution is the same in all the 30 halos.
The halo, right?
Right, so the 30 halos all have, this is the mass of the dark matter, mass of the baryons, and the softening length. This is in general the same for all 30 halos. The masses are all around 10 to the 12 Milky Way masses, and we chose the ones which have the correct stellar mass because some of the stellar masses were different. So the ones which matched better the rotation curves and had the correct stellar mass were the four grasp-like halos so there were 10 out of these 30. There were 10 which matched well our criteria, but four of them only had the grasp. So we only used those four rather than using the 10 which in general have the grasp.
And all of them are using the same ISM model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I have a difficult question and easy question.
Okay.
So apparently the difficult question. So apparently everybody who works on this, I guess what you call grasp, calls it something different.
Yes.
Do you know why?
So it was, yeah, that's a good question. I don't know why. So there was the group of Amina Helmi, which called it Enceladus, Gaia Enceladus first. Then there was, so the sausage name came from this radial and isotropic elongated way of this in velocities, right? Not in space, but in velocities. In general, we didn't like that name, so we...
Who called it sausage?
Wynn Evans and collaborators in this paper. Yeah. They're a bit attached.
Names are different.
No, there's more, right? Because Mariangela has some other name for this, right?
I think did they have a name really, or they also
the different one, the goddess,
yeah,
the
there's a
or whatever.
Right. This one is still called sausage in quotations in their papers, but then people call it radially an isotropic structure. It's just too long to say, so I don't know. Grass baby is not such a good acronym, but. It's just shorter.
That was difficult. So the easy question is, the resolution that you had showing for this ionic simulation,
mm-hmm.
I think you had like particle mass of 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6
yes.
masses, and
yeah.
the softening length of, I think, 300 particles.
Yeah, depending on the, yeah.
So we're just looking at the Aquarius, the highest resolution round, they had 10 to the 3 solar masses,
yes.
and then like,
yes.
The softening length for 20.
20, yeah, yeah.
So
of course
higher.
Their resolution is much higher, obviously. Yeah, yeah. But this is kind of the range. I mean, the best ones here can reach maybe 100 kiloparsec, 100 parsec, sorry, yeah. But this is sort of the range, and not much lower than 10 to the 4 solar masses for the dark matter when you include baryons. But yeah, so it's still a way to go.
I mean, we know the cesium hierarchy itself could go to much, much lower masses.
Right.
Like
right.
minus 6 solar masses.
Right.
So the question is that wouldn't the substructure that could be responsible for the, for the deviations, they are just missing from these simulations because they're not resolving?
That, of course, there, yeah, as I mentioned, there can always be some substructure below the resolution. Well, there were some studies done. On what happens with substructures in general in these cosmological simulations, and they find that the effect of the disk, galactic disk, is to resolve these, deplete these substructures, but you cannot go to really pinpoint the solar neighborhood. So they looked at ranges between, 10 to 20 kiloparsec or 0 to 10 kiloparsec, and they see that the substructure abundance is in general less in simulation. So in two different simulations, they did it both in, Eagle Apostle and in Apostle as well as in another simulation, maybe Fire. And they found, both of them found that this substructure is reduced because due to baryons. But again, if you cannot go, you have to, dark matter only simulations also look into this question. And they find that there is really a low percentage of for example, the sun sitting in a clump of dark matter. So to have an overdensity or underdensity, again, if you include baryons, things they find that it's less substructures, but you cannot have, you don't have the resolution to go to the position of the sun. So yeah, there might always be something below.
It's not just resolution. So once you increase the resolution, you need to.
So just following up on substructure, I was wondering whether you have the resolution to look into the detailed dark matter distribution in dwarf galaxies.
So these can go as, so you see this is the dark matter masses. So you can look at objects which are maybe 10 to the 9 solar masses with these simulations and look at the profiles of dark matter. And people have been doing that as well in these cosmological simulations. Yeah, but not much less, because then you wouldn't have enough particles.
You picked up some Milky Way-like halos here. But how about the other halos? They have a similar distribution like the real universe.
So the sizes and their luminosities and so on, this is something which they, you know, tune their parameters to get similar to the universe, what you observe in the universe. So in these cosmological simulations, you know, you can go from different from the size of dwarfs to clusters of galaxies, and things should fit more or less to observations, not only the Milky Way. But for example, for the velocity distribution, we didn't it wasn't a question for us to look at non-Milky Way-like. It's an interesting academic question maybe to see what it is, but for us, we were interested to see what happens with direct detection event rates. And so we wanted to find a halo which is a good realization of the Milky Way. But you could look at all these other halos which are not, but I'm not sure what. I mean, it could be a general, you know.
For example, for a specific point, such as in the real universe, we have the fraction of the Milky Way-like galaxies. And the fraction is the same as your simulation or not?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if the fraction is the same. We didn't do that sort of analysis to see, but to answer that question, you do find in the simulations, as I showed you, like a bunch of different galaxies which are similar to the ones that you see in the universe, like, you know, different disk galaxies, ellipticals, and so on. But the exact, you know, fraction, it's a hard question to answer, because I'm not sure if we know. Milky Way is in a way, you know, a bit special also in the different properties. So I'm not sure if you know in general if it's what the exact fraction of, or what criteria you can put to identify a galaxy, because you can put more and more criteria, and of course you're not going to find a halo which is exactly like the Milky Way, and that wasn't also the point, because you want different realizations. But you could put more and more constraining criteria, but there is a, you have to, you will lose a statistics. So yeah.
Okay, so let's thank Vasily again.